Hey guys, my name is Ellen Nichols, and I'm one of the co-hosts here of the Stray Popcorn Podcast. I just wanted to take a moment on behalf of myself and Brock, Brock Vincent Sharp, the other co-host of this podcast, to just take a moment to thank you guys for listening to this first inaugural episode. Me and Brock, or Brock and I, rather, or Brock and me. I don't even know how that really goes. I know it's Brock and I or Brock and me. One of the two, damn it. But anyway, we have been talking about doing this podcast for almost a year, and it's taken us this long to finally just sit down and record the damn thing. So guys, thank you so much. It means a lot to us, and we're looking forward to recording many, many more. In this episode, we talk about a variety of different things, and we're kind of just exploring what this is all about. But this is really about pop culture and a love for it, and a love for movies and music, and a variety of other things as well. A lot of art-related stuff, because I'm definitely connected into the art-related stuff, and so is Brock, for that matter. But, you know, we ended up talking even about a lot of personal stories from our childhood. Brock with Dirty Dancing, and myself with the Flintstones. So we hope you all enjoy that. Anyway, guys, please enjoy this podcast. More definitely coming in the future. And yeah, I guess that's all I have to share here. So guys, without further ado, here we go.
So over the top, I won't accident you. Number one tonight, you want protection now. Whoa, 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 whoa.
Alrighty, man. Well, how's your week been?
It's been pretty good. Huh? Just been, you know, hanging out. I saw some good movies this week. I saw Her.
Oh, really?
The new movie from Spike Jones. That was probably definitely ranked in my top five of the year.
Really?
Yeah. Have you seen it yet?
No, I haven't.
It's really good. I mean, it's not what I expected. I mean, when you go into a Spike Jones movie, I mean, he's definitely got some depth to his films, but it came out to me as being more of a more personal film for him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't want to give any spoilers away, so I'll keep that at bay. But it's basically a movie about a guy that is married, and the marriage falls apart. And basically, with the marriage falling apart, he becomes very lonesome and buys an OS operating system and falls in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
Because she can talk and have feelings and discover herself as time goes on. But it's a really great film because it helps when you watch it. It brings out a lot of things about like love, how we deal with memories in our brain of people, you know, how, and I'm sure you're guilty of this as well as I am. Like when you get angry with someone, the first reaction is to be angry with them versus to understand that they are a building block to becoming who you are.
Oh yeah. Yeah,
and that's what I really loved about the film. It really captures that really well.
Interesting. Sounds good. I mean, I've heard a few other people talk about it, and I've just not been able to go see it because, honestly, I've not been a big Spike Jones fan. He's done a few films in the past that I just, I don't know, maybe I'm attributing it to the wrong director, but I think it was that film. Was he responsible for Miracle at St. Anna's?
No.
Oh, okay. Totally different person then. There's somebody who is responsible for that film, and I remember just absolutely just loathing that film. I couldn't stand it. It just seemed like I had no idea of even what the hell I was watching. It just felt like a train wreck. So I've been thinking this entire time that it was the same director.
No, that is Spike Lee.
That was Spike Lee. Okay, that makes a whole lot more sense.
Yeah, Spike Jones did Being John Malkovich adaptation. He did Where All the Wild Things Are.
Okay. All right. That makes a lot more sense. I mean, I was never a big fan of adaptation. Being John Malkovich, yeah, I definitely enjoyed that film. Never even saw The Wild Things.
That was my least favorite. You know, to be honest, I'm more of a fan of Spike Lee. Now you got me saying Spike Jonze's videos.
Yeah.
And that's really where I'd heard of him first, you know. And I mean, he's done some great things. I mean, everybody knows the Beastie Boys Sabotage video.
Oh, yeah.
That was like one of his bigger ones. He did the sweater song video for Weezer, Say It Isn't So. So he's had a pretty hefty body of work from the 90s, you know, especially grunge era stuff.
Interesting. And then he got into films.
Yeah, and became a good director. I mean, I like adaptation. I think the reason I liked it so much is because it makes fun of the typical Hollywood writing. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of an exploration of that. He didn't even write that movie, actually. It was Kaufman that wrote that.
Oh, okay.
Hold on. I might have that wrong. That's going to bother me if I have that wrong.
Yeah, no worries. Well, while you're looking that up.
Charlie Kaufman. That's the guy.
Charlie Kaufman, okay. I think the thing that made me steer away from that film, and I may be wrong about this, but that was during the time when Nicolas Cage, he started having some tax problems. He just started having some financial difficulties, and he started accepting a lot of films at that point that were not so great. And I had been burned too many times, I think, and I was just like, oh, great. You know, like, I'm not so certain about this. You know, I don't know if I should really... go see that. So I don't know if I've even seen it. Like, I may have only seen parts of it here and there.
Oh, dude, you gotta see it.
Okay.
Like, it's I'll give you the idea why it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Kaufman was asked to write Susan Orlean's book, The Orca Thief, into a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was asked to do that, he sat on the book forever because it's pretty much an you can't adapt the book to anything.
Right.
Like, it has no big story structure to it. And so instead of doing that, he ended up writing an adaptation out of it, which is a story of him, the story of himself and his supposed twin brother.
Mm-hmm.
And he's writing the book, and he turns the book into, like, this crazy thriller.
Wow.
and so it's kind of entertaining. It makes fun of typical Hollywood writing, and it's actually, to me, one of Nicolas Cage's best performances.
Interesting. Well, challenge accepted. I'll definitely go check that out. That sounds good.
But see Her first. I think you'll really dig Her. So.
Okay. I mean, you know what? It's been on my plate to go see. Not on my plate, but on my lineup, because I have like this little list of films that I'm always interested to go see, and then I eventually get around to seeing them one way or another. But I don't know. That one just really has been standing out to me in the last couple of weeks, so I think that'll be good. As you've already said, it is, so.
Yeah, definitely one of my favorites of the year.
Well, I don't know. I guess we should go ahead and talk about, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah, that was pretty mind-blowing.
Yeah. I just went on Facebook on Sunday morning, and I scrolled down a little bit, and I ended up seeing your post later down there. But I initially saw, like, I had a few friends who were like, rest in peace, Seymour Hoffman, you know, the kind of the generic thing that a lot of people do. And I'm like, no. Like, usually I believe it, because it's like people who kind of like, oh, well, they were older, you know, they were getting up there in years. It's, you know... it's understandable at some point they're going to pass away. That sounded really cold, but when I saw for Philip Seymour Hoffman, I'm like, there's no way. Like, that has to be a joke, you know? And sure enough, like, that was staggering. That kind of set me back. I know you were affected by it. You definitely wrote that on Facebook.
Yeah, it was really upsetting for me because he's always been like, every time he's in a movie, I have to watch it. I'm not going to sit here and say I've seen everything he's seen, but mm-hmm. whenever he's done a movie and it seems somewhat interesting to me, I'd watch it. And it's just really flooring to me that he's gone because he was such a great supporting actor. I mean, he's a good lead actor, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, he always brought a different kind of aura to the screen whenever he was in a film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the first time I ever took notice of him, I mean, well, the first movie I ever saw with him in it was Cinema Woman. He played a side note character, kind of the bully type character.
Mm-hmm.
And he stood out in that movie, but you know, it's like every actor in the early 90s, like you didn't really know if they'd ever go off to do anything.
Yeah.
So whatever. But first movie I saw him and I was like, he's a really amazing actor, was Boogie Nights.
Oh, yeah. That was his breakout role.
And he was really amazing in that. Like, I mean, he played such an insecure person, like, in a way I'd never seen on screen. I mean, it was very, very emotional. I mean, there's, like, the scene in that movie where he's hitting on Dirk for the first time. And he has, like, that, you know, I'm stupid, you know. He does that whole bit. And, like, I'll never forget that scene. I think it's one of the most brilliant performances I've ever seen in my life.
You know what? I saw someone retweeted... And I caught it on Twitter the other day. Someone, maybe it was James Urbaniak, and he, at one point, he was auditioning for a role on Broadway, and he thought he had done a really, really great job. It may have been for Midsummer's Night Dream or something like that. And, you know, pretty much he felt like he was, you know, going to get the role. And everyone loved him, and he knew the people, and he ended up not getting the role. And he ended up going back there on opening night. And then Philip Seymour Hoffman was the one who got the role. And he says, like, what he did with that character, he didn't even imagine it. Like, he didn't even come close to that in the audition process. And that was a performance. That was a night that he would never forget. And he just had so much respect for him. I thought that was nice. Like, I thought that was just a nice way of, like, you know, acknowledging, you know, his amazing talent. I'll be honest. I think my favorite role of his, and it's not like the best film either by far. It's definitely not the best film that he's ever done. But, I, you know, the Mission Impossible film, I think it was the third one.
let me stop you there, because... I'm going to have to agree with you on this, because when I saw him in that movie, he is such a monster.
I know. I love
that. Like, he is so good in that role. Like, that could have been an easily passable role in any other movie.
Right.
And he makes that role stand out. Like, when he says Ethan Hawke, no, not Ethan Hawke, but what was his last name in the movie?
Ethan Hunt.
Hunt. Yeah. Sorry. I kept wanting to throw Hawke out there for some reason.
You have a girlfriend, because I'm going to find her. I'm going to find her, and I'm going to hurt her.
Oh, yeah. Dude, he's so good in that part. Yeah, I know. So
it was, like, really, the film was kind of forgettable for the most part. You know, no one really performed, you know, like a breakout role in that. You know, everyone was just kind of doing the Mission Impossible thing. But his villain was truly frightening. And I don't know, there was something about it that, you know, you usually go into a film, you know, everything's going to work out for the hero, you know, that's kind of, and especially with these films, you know, that there's not going to be any major casualties on the good guy side. But I kind of went into that film and I was thinking that, and then I was watching it and his role was just so mesmerizing and it just leapt off the screen. I'm like, what are you doing in this film? You know, this
character... I'm gonna have to disagree with you there, though. I think that was when Mission Impossible got good.
Really? Yeah.
I mean,
I didn't hate the film. You know, I really did like the original, but that was for different reasons. But the second one was crap, in my opinion, anyway. But I thought the third one was just gonna be following that formula. And I mean, look, I definitely think that he made that film so much better. And I think that film definitely, you know, was a big step up, you know, in the right direction. But I still, like, his role was so, like, again, I thought it was just so amazing that it was almost like, wow, this is just almost too good for this film, you know?
Yeah, no, and he, to me, has always done his best work with Paul Thomas Anderson, like, and even Sidney Lumet, who's one of my favorite directors. But, I mean, Magnolia was good. Mm-hmm. He steals the show in Punch Drunk Love.
Oh, I haven't even seen that.
I mean, him as the con artist mattress man guy is completely brilliant. And, I mean, I don't know if you saw The Master. I mean, he embodied that role the entire movie.
You know what? I've been working recently on writing some, you know, my new cohort story. And I've got this character in it who I would say is very much based off of, like, Philip Seymour Hoffman's performance in that film, because I could really buy him, you know, as that kind of religious type leader. And yeah. He sold it. He honestly, I think he defined it for, like, whichever actors come and follow along with another type film that goes in that direction. I mean, I would really hate to be the person to follow that up. Cause I don't know if you would really do it justice. But definitely a challenge for whoever wants to take it on. So,
well, I mean, he reminds me of John Cazale. Did you ever see any John Cazale's work?
I'm not entirely positive who that is, actually, so I'm not sure.
Famous actor. He basically died like after doing just like a kick-ass run of Oscar roles. I mean, listen to this guy. The Deer Hunter, Dog Day Afternoon, The Godfather 2, The Conversation, and The Godfather.
Wow. Well, I mean, I definitely have seen his work. I just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just... it saddens me he's going to end up being our generation's John Cazale. He's going to be this actor that just did awesome role after awesome role. Mm-hmm. And our kids are never going to get the experience. And the way that our kids are going to get the experience, you know, De Niro and all those guys.
Right, right.
So it's just, it's like nuts. I mean, my parents, you know, recognize De Niro's work and they love, you know, Dustin Hoffman. We got the experience that, you mm-hmm. know, our kids are never going to get the experience how awesome Philip Seymour Hoffman is. So to me, he's like our John Cazale.
Right.
I mean, he was just a brilliant, brilliant actor. And it's going to be sad that they're never going to get the experience, the older version of that.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know exactly what his cause of death was. I mean, I read somewhere it was like heroin or something like that, but
pretty sure it was.
Yeah,
because that's been in more than one report, which is sad because he was, from what I understood, had been out of drugs for 23 years, and then he just relapsed.
Yeah. I mean, it happens to the best of people, you know, so, I mean, it's just incredibly sad. I was just really heartbroken when I heard that news. And I don't know, lately I've just been wanting to go back and watch a lot of his films. And that was even before he passed. I saw him in something, I think it was the new Hunger Games film, because he was in that one, playing the game maker. And it just reminded me how much I really loved his performances and his films. And so I was just like thinking about that the other day, like, yeah, I should really go out there and like find a few films I haven't seen of his. And of course, you know, you're definitely the person to recommend it. And I've already kind of taken note of what you've said. That's what happened there.
Well, yeah, the last movie I watched him in was The Hunger Games as well, which from what I read today, it's actually because his parts and also the last two that they're going to put out, mm-hmm. and it's all been shot.
Oh, so, okay, so they've already actually filmed all of that.
Yeah, they said they had a week left, which usually if there was a week left, there's like really small minor things left to shoot.
Right, pickup shots and stuff like that.
Right, yeah. So they didn't seem... like it was going to be an issue.
Well, I mean, they could probably use a double or digitally impose him in certain things if they needed to. I'm glad that they have his, I'm glad that they're already have all the footage of him though. I think that's amazing. I was kind of a little bit worried about that. Like, I wonder what will end up happening with that. Cause as I could put together, he's kind of a major character in that last part. So.
Well, I was hoping that they were going to make like a marionette of him and like, have that and replace him in the movie with the marionette. I just thought it would take the entertainment value a little bit up, but I don't think that's happening now, so I'm kind of bummed out.
Well, I'm glad they're not going to digitally impose him into the film.
I'm kidding.
No. I'm totally aware of that. No, I'm just glad like that. Well, I mean, that was one thought that did go through my head. Like, okay, they're either going to recast. Because I didn't actually know that they had already captured all that footage, which makes sense. They probably already filmed both of those films already. But I was just thinking, like, yeah, the last thing I want is like a Polar Express moment, you know, where it's just.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I was like, that would not be the right way to remember him. At that point, I was just like, well, you need to recast.
Polar Express. I think that might be. The most, I just like that movie makes my skin crawl.
Yeah,
man.
That's the most terrifying children's film ever.
My mom, it's Christmas time and we had it on the TV, and my mom was like, "Are they for real with this?"
I remember being in a theater And my mom really wanted to go see it. And it was Christmas. So I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll indulge you. And we went to the theater and there were some kids in the audience. And at one point, this one child was freaked out either by Tom Hanks's character or something and just started sobbing and screaming. And then afterwards, you would hear like the trickle effect, you know, of other children being terrified of this. And so the theater we started off with, there was not many people in it to begin with. And then over the period of that time, by the end of the film, it was just me and my mom in the theater. And we were just like, why the hell did we sit through this? You know?
Oh. No, Robert Zemeckis made the film version of Tyler Durden's penis, right?
Oh, Lord. Oh, man. It's funny. You don't even see that played anywhere during the holidays. Like, they do not rerun it. They're just like, nope. Not gonna do it.
Except like ABC's, what is it, like 30 days of Christmas or 2 months of, I don't know, like that marathon they run. It's like you're not surprised when they're showing like Facts of Life Christmas special because they've overcommitted themselves.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, the Star Wars Christmas special, you know.
Brought to you by no one, because no one wants that to exist.
Oh, man. Actually, honestly, I think they should just own it. You know, the Star Wars Christmas special, I think they should just freaking own it or have a dedicated time where the Riff Tracks guys do it, because they have theirs. So that's the best way to do it. Just Riff Tracks Christmas, Star Wars Christmas special, and every other Christmas special that should have never have come about. Just all in one day, you know?
See, I remember as a child watching that, and I don't know, because I don't remember if they ever reran it.
No.
So I don't know if it was like a copy my uncle had gotten somehow on beta or what, but I remember watching it. It may even be remembering it wrong. It may have been like an Ewok Christmas special or something, and that just rang to my head or whatever. But those were awful, too. I don't know if you ever saw those. The Ewok films?
Yes. Actually, I picked them up at Walmart one time. I think they were like $3. Yeah. And I had never seen it before. And I'm a big Star Wars fan. So I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll check these out. Sure. And I got those things home. And I'm like, what the hell is this? I'm like, why did I buy this? I mean, I wasted $3, you know, and the time that I spent actually watching it. I think I made it through 10 minutes of it. And I'm just like, nope, done. Like,
so was that a girl or a boy in that film? I can't remember.
No idea. Absolutely no idea. At first I was like, oh, it's clearly a girl. And then they started talking. I'm like,
We're getting to the bottom of this, right?
You know what? Maybe their whole point was like, we want the character to relate to boys and girls. So we think the solution is it be neither.
So let's go. Let's put the 80s equivalent of Pat.
Yeah.
in an Ewoks film.
Yeah. Yes, because that will be a less, you know, that's definitely the way to go. You know, we don't want to specify gender. You know, we just want this character to be a little bit androgynous. And maybe they didn't know. Maybe that was the problem. They're just like, oh, this is a very unique child. Let's cast him in this role, you know.
I'm about to get our answer here. Let's see.
And the answer to the question, I don't even remember the name of the kid. Like, I don't even remember the character's name.
I'm on the hunt.
And you're hungry like a wolf.
Was that in that movie? That should have been in that
movie. No, but it would have made it a lot more entertaining. I can tell you that. Oh, what else? I mean, I know they did the Christmas special, the Ewok specials. Didn't they do something else?
Here it is. Sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
Nope.
It was Mace and Sindel, the son and daughter. So, yeah. It was a girl.
It was a girl. Okay. I was still confused by that. Like, the son and daughter, I'm like, there was two kids? Oh, you know, yeah. There was. That's right. There was two kids. I just remember the girl then. Like, I don't even remember the son. Well, didn't the son get killed or something?
And she looked like a cross between Olivia Newton-John in the physical video, like the workout outfit.
That's right, because she had the headband on.
And the bad guy in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, and it, like, had that thing going on. I don't know.
Well, that's fascinating. What was the?
He had like the whole. I don't know.
What was the name of the movies? I totally have forgotten.
There was that one was called the Ewok Adventure.
Okay.
And the other one was the Battle of Endor.
Wow, the Ewok Misadventure. You know what they are? Have you heard about the plans at Disneyland?
About them turning Tomorrowland into Star Wars Land.
Yep. Yep. They're starting out here at the Disneyland Park in California. And I'm, of course, interested in that because that's my park. You know, that's where I go to all the time. So I guess they're pulling out Autotopia, and I heard that they were doing like an indoor ride. But I originally read something, and I think it was like the indoor adventure. And I'm like, wait, what? You know, at first I was thinking Ewok Adventure, and I think that was the film that I was thinking of. And I'm like, oh, please, God, no. Please tell me that they're not actually going that approach. And then I heard, no, it was a speeder bike ride. And I'm like, oh, okay, fantastic. That sounds amazing.
Yeah, I'm completely disappointed by that now.
Oh, really? Yeah, that is not the Ewok Adventure?
I want it to be like some like wooden roller coaster buggy thing. And like they just throw Ewoks at you while you go around on the track.
Do you know what?
I think that would be...
That was something that I never got about Disney, okay? So they own the Indiana Jones rights now. But even beforehand, they had a partnership. So when I heard back like in the 90s that ride was going to be installed into the park, my thought was, yeah. Oh, they're going to go with the Temple of Doom, you know, the train ride, you know, not the train ride, but the, you know, the coal mine cart, you know, or the diamond mine, whatever the cart was inside the mine. I thought that would have been perfect. And I got into the ride. And of course, I do love the Indiana Jones ride, but it was not what I expected. I'm like, oh, well, you guys could have so clearly have gone with the roller coaster route instead of this virtual like Jeep ride that you went with. But I sound like I'm disappointed with it, but I'm not. I love that ride.
I do too.
Yeah, it's one of the best rides there. Have you been on it recently, like any time in the last couple of years or so?
The last time I went was probably around 2003, ooh, 2004 maybe.
You know what, when you were out here at this park here in California, because you know next time you're coming out here we gotta hit up there. But
yeah, for sure.
Well, Star Tours, of course, what we were talking about. Now, that ride is off the chain. Unless you end up getting stuck with prequel movies, then it kind of blows. But because they do, like, they change the scenes up per ride, so you never get the same experience. Sometimes you'll go to Endor, but other times you'll go to Coruscant or one of the original trilogy films or, unfortunately, some of the prequel trilogy films. And yeah, and they'll combine them sometimes too, which I'm bothered by, because you know I'm just like, oh please don't mix these two, you know. It's like, and they may replace the prequel ones as the new films come out, you know, with the more current films that they're working on right now with J.J. Abrams, which I hope, unless those are bad too. But anyway, I was just anyway, back to the Indiana Jones ride before I derailed on the Star Wars. They added a few new additions that I was just recently on the ride. As you go in there, you know, you get the big, you get the big head of the god that's looking at you, and the eyes used to glow red. But now they actually replaced the glowing eyes, with actual like, digitally added at, like there's basically a projector against each part of the lids, and so now the eyes move and are looking at you, and it was crazy. Like I just noticed it like this past Christmas holiday when I was there with my family, and I was just blown away, and they did a lot of stuff to it. So definitely worth checking out. I just wanted to point it out to anybody who's listening, going to a Disneyland park, going to Disney World, you have to see that. I thought that was stellar.
I really want to see it. I was really disappointed the last time I went because they had Star Tours closed down.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They, for the longest time at the Disneyland park before they started the renovation, the audio tracks were out of sync with the video. And so it was causing people to get really sick. And I wrote it one time too because I'm like, I love Star Tours. You know, one of my favorite rides as a kid. And I got on it right before they shut it down and refurbed it. And I started to really feel sick by the end of it. And I'm like, because it was just like the motion and the audio and everything like that were all out of, slightly out of track, not majorly, but enough where it caused motion sickness and stuff like that. So I'm glad that they refurbed it instead of just getting rid of it. But yeah, that's got to be disappointing. So you went back in 2003, right?
Yeah. And I mean, but luckily at the time I did get to go to Universal and ride the Back to the Future ride before they closed it.
Oh, Back to the Future ride. That is one of my favorites. One of my absolute favorites. They had it out here at the Universal Hollywood. And I guess it's now the Simpsons ride. But
yeah, why did they do that?
I don't know. I would have just liked them to keep the Back to the Future ride. It's one of the best rides ever.
Of course, there's always a countdown until they reboot that. I have a feeling we're going to see that in the next couple of years.
Who is that property owned by? Universal?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they're already making the musical.
Oh, that I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, they're doing a musical stage thing in London.
Oh, really? I heard somebody, it was another podcast, but I remember somebody talking about how they wish that they would do a Back to the Future musical, but from the perspective of Goldie Wilson, of of Mayor Goldie Wilson, and
yes.
And like, you know, what's this all about, you know? I thought that was the most ingenious idea ever, and for a while they were actually writing like musical numbers for it. And this was nothing official, mind you. This was just the endeavor of a few people who really wanted to see this. But it was amazing. I loved it. I thought that was the best idea ever from the perspective of Goldie Wilson.
One of my best friends, Joey, we did a short, which we keep sitting on, where it's the whole point of the short is it's basically messed up conversation pieces. Mm-hmm. So it's like, take everything like we would talk about and just take the most absurd parts of our conversations.
Right.
And you just get those pieces. Mm-hmm. There's one part in it where he starts talking about how Back to the Future should be shown through the views of Einstein's eyes.
That would actually be really interesting.
And that's funny that you said that. It reminded me of that.
Yeah.
But we should put that up at some point. It's pretty funny.
Oh, yeah. Man, I do miss Back to the Future. That would be a franchise that I'd be okay with them rebooting. Well, maybe not rebooting, but just continuing. Because it wasn't like, I don't know, maybe they'll end up just rebooting it. But I don't know. I'd be cool if they just did another film on top of that. However, now that I'm saying that, I'm thinking, I thought the same thing about Indiana Jones for years, and then we got Crystal Skull. So
I don't hate that movie as much as everybody else does.
I didn't even hate it at the time. I mean, I remember thinking, oh, okay, you know, it's not as good as I hoped it would be. But I mean, I think upon further viewings, my big problem with that film was LaBeouf. You know, just I was like,
yeah,
good God.
There's that.
Yeah, I'm like, please, God. And then there's the Tarzan scene, and I'm like, that was like the jumping the shark moment for me. That was just, okay, you know, I will buy the Ark of the Covenant being open and Nazis being melted and the force of God coming down. I will buy that a man's heart can be ripped out, you know, just saying Kaliba, Kaliba. I will buy all of that. But the moment that you get LaBeouf swinging Vine Divine like Tarzan, that is the moment that you have lost my interest, sir.
Yeah, I can't stand him.
Yeah.
At all. Like,
what?
It's just, I can't believe that they put him in that movie.
What was the film? I mean, I don't really know about a lot of the controversy that is going around about him right now. I know that he plagiarize somebody's work, but I don't really know anything about it. Do you know anything about it?
I do. I don't know the exact story he ripped off, mm-hmm. but he did a short film, and the short film ended up being a direct ripoff of some guy's like comic book or something.
Yeah, okay, that's right. I did hear that part. I'm actually looking that up.
He was saying that, like, he was kind of using the like Warhol excuse, which is, you know, you can steal something and make it better. Like, everybody's kind of like pulling from influences. But like, there's a difference between like showing, trying to give you an example. having a dance scene with John Travolta and doing a tribute to, you know, Saturday Night Fever,
right,
and Pulp Fiction versus just blatantly stealing someone else's writing.
Yeah.
And so, like, I don't understand his reasoning. And then, like, he started ripping. He became a smartass about it, mm-hmm, and started, like, ripping off other people's tweets in apology.
Yeah. And then I know I actually did witness the skywriting incident, because that was out here in L.A. And what was the name of the guy? I don't even remember. Like,
the guy you ripped off?
Yeah, I don't even know. I'm not even going to try to. Oh, Daniel Klaus.
Yeah.
And yeah, so there was a big, like, apology letter in the sky, which is hysterical because Daniel Klaus doesn't live out here in L.A. He lives in San Francisco. but it's just like, and then he did the entire retirement thing, and I'm reading on this website that I'm on right now, I'm on a Guardian, that his 3 weeks of retirement is now over because he just joined a project.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh man, who the hell hired
him? It was someone big too. Hold on,
let me see. Levinson, I think. I'm not even sure. Oh, Bill Murray is rumored to play the lead role of Richie Vance, with Bruce Willis and Kate Hudson to play parts of the ensemble comedy. Danny McBride and his younger Your Highness co-star Zooey Deschanel have also been tapped to appear. Rock the Casbah.
So you were right. It was Barry Levinson.
Yeah, yeah. So that's his new film. Wow. I mean, it's amazing. Like, you know, you see these people, like, go through these, like, well, just become train wrecks, and then someone, I mean, you know, Barry Levinson's not some name you just scoff at, you know, he's a serious filmmaker, and all of a sudden it's just like, yeah, you know what, there's something about you, kid. There's something about you.
I like,
there's
a magic. I like the way you retire.
You're crazy, kid, but I like you. I like you. I like the way that you rip things off from other people. You know what, that's what I'm looking for.
I can't believe he's just, these new celebrities are weird, man. Like Amanda Bynes and that whole thing. Like,
I mean, Lindsay at least Lohan, in her,
like, case, all these people.
At least in her case, like, I think she actually is now getting, like, severe, not severe, but she's getting serious psychiatric attention, which is why she's kind of disappeared, which is good. But Lindsay Lohan, yeah, it's all of them. It's just like, it's amazing to see the train wrecks that happen. Like with, you know, even currently, like even with Justin Bieber and stuff like that.
It's like Disney's that book Flowers in the Attic.
Yeah.
Like everybody's in the attic. Troubled. Everybody comes out troubled.
Oh man, you know, did you notice that they remade that recently?
Yes, and
with Don Draper's daughter.
That's a little strange.
I know. I will never be able to watch Mad Men in a sane way again. Not a sane way, but I don't know.
Good actors though, man. I really have always been pretty impressed with her on Mad Men.
Yeah, actually, I think she's been able to handle herself really well, which is amazing. I hope she doesn't end up becoming like any of the people we've just been talking about. But yeah, you know, I mean, actually, she does a really great job on that show. However, going back to Flowers in the Attic, I remember that movie just deeply disturbing me. You know, years ago. I don't know what your experience with that film was, but
well, my grandmother always read those books, like all the V.C. Andrews books, and I think my mom read them. Actually, my mom had me get them all for her while she was going through her thing, and I got them for her. So they've been kind of around the household for a while. Mm-hmm. But when I saw the movie, I had never personally read it.
Yeah, I had neither. I never read the books. But I saw the film, and there was this feeling about me, like anytime anybody would touch me on the shoulder, I just would kind of wince, like, no, no. Like, there was just this really raw tenderness to me after seeing that, just because it was just like, oh, I'm so weirded out right now.
Yeah, I mean, it was a movie where Buffy the Vampire Slayer got her world rocked by a brother. I mean, that's going to be a little weird.
And then, but really creeped me out even more than that, though, was the child that wouldn't grow.
Yeah.
Because something about, you know, vitamin deficiency from the sun or whatever. But that just weirded me out to no end. That was like the ultimate horror film for me, you know. Which,
it really was. Yeah. It was. And then that scene at the end, spoiler alert for a movie from 1987. that where they like come down the stairs and the mom's getting married and everything, and they're like looking all like people under the stairs, you know.
Oh, wow.
They just look dirty and gross, and like, mom, you've been locking us in the attic for all this time, and like the husband's backing up. It's like, how oblivious were these people? Were they doing a lot of drugs before they got married? Because you have kids, but they're not around. They're in an attic with a grandmother that hardly ever feeds them. I mean, it's just such a bizarre situation anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think when I see stories like that, you know, I cannot help. What was the inspiration for this? What corner of the mind does this kind of thing come from? Because I want to know why, so that we can properly identify it and make sure that these individuals are separated from society.
Yeah, VC Andrews must have had like her world rocked when she was growing up. Like somebody fed her like screws and nails in her
suit. I know. I feel really bad for her. It's just like, what happened to you for this story to be born out of your imagination? And was it your imagination? Because if this was in any way based on real events, I don't even know what to do with that.
And all of her books, from what I understand, are like that. Like, just complete over-the-top, like, soap opera with macabre, just bad, not even good macabre, just like disturbing, like you've gone through something. I don't.
You poor and, woman.
But you got to ask yourself, what is wrong with, like, even like, I love my grandmother, I love my mom, but like, that was a number one best-selling book.
Oh, I know. I think my mom even read it, if I'm not mistaken, or someone did. I think my mom had to read it. Maybe she had to read it for school, if I'm not mistaken, which opened up a whole new level of questions for me. Like, what the hell? Like, who did you have? Like, was this like a mandatory thing by the school district? Was this part of a curriculum?
I mean, did she have to read it the same way that every mother had a back massage?
Oh man,
No worries.
I mean, yeah, I've actually heard a few people talk about it, that this was mandatory reading from school. And that blows my mind. Like, cause I've seen the film. I'm like, is the book different than the film? Maybe, you know, cause I wasn't certain about that, but you actually mentioned in the film, Sarah Michelle Gellar was in it, or was it, Christy Swanson?
Christy Swanson.
Oh God.
Not even the good Buffy the Vampire.
I know. The bad one is the really, really bad one. Oh, man. Who else was in that film? I'm trying to think. Like,
no one.
Luke Perry. No, wasn't it Luke Perry? One of the 90210 kids.
You're right on Buffy. I thought you were talking about Flowers in the Attic.
Oh, no. Just Christy Swanson. She was in Buffy and Flowers in the Attic and a bunch of other films as a blonde woman.
And a lot of movies that came on late at night on Cinemax.
She was a person whose career seemed like it was going to go pretty far for a moment. And I don't know if that's based off of talent, but, you know, she kind of seemed like she could have been one of the Breakfast Club kids. And then, you know, she just kind of faded into obscurity, you know.
I'm looking at her IMDb right now.
I know what she does recent. I have seen her in something recently. She did a Psych on USA. So
her last movie is a sequel to a movie I don't think anyone's ever heard of, Nemesis.
Nemesis. The only thing that I know of the name Nemesis in the title is a Star Trek film.
Right. But this is Nemesis. M-I-M. E-S-I-S. Let's see what this is. A group of horror movie fans are invited to a preview of a unique haunted attraction, but soon find themselves trapped inside the classic vampire film Nosferatu.
Oh, man. Holy Lord. Oh, Christy Swanson, come here. Let me give you a hug. I am so sorry for what this industry has done to you.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Oh, I mean, man, that's like one step away from being in a Seagal film, you know?
But hold on, don't say that. She might have been in a Seagal film.
Oh no, you know what? It's very true. It's very true.
Hold on. Let's see. Has Christy Swanson ever been in a Steven Seagal film? I gotta know.
Oh man.
I know she was in, did you ever see that movie, Higher Learning?
Was that the one where the teacher, no. What was the, well, I know, I'm thinking of The Substitute. No, I don't think I've ever seen Higher Learning.
Higher Learning was like the 90s equivalent of Crash.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see Crash?
I've seen Crash, but I've never seen High. Yeah, like, yeah, we already established
it's
that.
It's like, look at how all different we are. It's that movie. Yeah. Like,
but clearly, I mean, Crash is the one that's really known for.
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt. I just had a revelation about Christy Swanson. She was in Flowers in the Attic where incest happened. Mm-hmm. And then she was in Higher Learning and she got raped. What are they doing to this girl?
Oh, man. Wow. I you know what? Again, like, I don't really remember much that she's been in. Like, yeah, I barely remember anything. It's weird. Like, there's just a...
Hollywood's a strange place, man.
You know what? It's weird, though. Like, I would say that for me, I was always aware of her, you know? Like, I always kind of knew, like, oh, yeah, Christy Swanson. Anytime I see her on something, I'm like, oh, it's Christy Swanson. And I guess that's maybe just connected to Buffy, you know? As bad as that film was, I did like the premise of it. I think the premise was great, which is why it got turned into a TV show. But
I saw it in the theater when it came out.
I did, too. I saw it, too, and I didn't see a lot of films when I was a kid in theater. Like, I remember seeing Batman and Ghostbusters 2 and Ninja Turtles. I'm sure I saw both of those, you know, stuff like that. And then I remember Buffy, you know.
You want me to date myself? I saw E.T. in the theater.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yikes. That was with a young Drew Barrymore.
Yeah.
And some other kids who went on to do nothing.
And a alien that looked like a penis.
Yeah. Oh, man. You know what? I don't even really remember most of E.T. now. And I've seen it a lot of times in my childhood. I just barely remember it.
I love it. I still have to watch it once a year.
Oh, really? Yeah. I should watch it again. There's a lot of films. But, you know, there is some point where it's like I'll go to Netflix and I'll look at all the films that they have. And a thought just comes in my head. If I were to sit down and just start watching every single one of these films, you know, I would never be able to get through the list, not in my entire lifetime.
Yeah. I mean, I'll probably watch about 3 movies a week if I get time for that.
Yeah. I mean, I probably am somewhere around 2. But I watch a lot of, like, you know, serialized television and stuff like that. So that's where my attention goes to most of the time.
Yeah. I have to be real selective on my shows now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get to watch them like I used to.
Let's compare lists. So what do you watch?
Right now? Man, you put me on the spot because I'm kind of like going through some back catalog stuff right now. Justified.
Mm-hmm.
Girls.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm thinking. Oh. Doctor Who. I always watch my Doctor Who reruns.
Oh, yeah. I've been watching a lot of Tom Baker episodes lately.
Yeah, I've dabbled in that a little bit. I know I'm watching more than that. It just sounds like the lamest list ever. I watch Justified and Girls.
No, not at all. I understand. I'm a little bit more robust in my list. Let's see. What I'm watching recently, I've been watching Arrow on the CW. Really, really loving that show. And let's see, I've also been watching The Goldbergs, which is an ABC family comedy, whatever.
But is that good?
That show is genius. And it reminds you of all the best parts of the 80s. And it really is, I don't know, whoever, Adam Goldberg is one of the, he's actually, it's about his life. So he actually does pull things from his life, and he was a kid who had the video camera on all the time. So the show is based off of that. So he pulls stories from things that actually happened in his family, and they're hysterical. Like, it really is kind of a dysfunctional family that you love. It's even dysfunctional, it's kind of normal, you know? So it's accurately, you know, portrayed. And then, of course, the timed pieces. Like, there was one episode where his brother on Halloween dresses up as Lou Ferrigno's Hulk. It is a fantastic episode. I love that show so much.
Jeff Garland's on that show too, isn't he?
Yeah, and you know what's weird? I actually met him in front of the Arclight one night, and I was desperately trying to remember his name, because I have that sometimes where I know this person. If you ask me any other time, I could tell you these actors' names. But I saw him, and I started to approach him, and then my brain is freaking out, like, oh my God, what is his name? What is his name? What is his name? And the only name that keeps popping to mind is George Carlin. I'm like, no, Brick, no, denied, no, give me the right name. And I'm like, my brain's subtly giving me hints, like, it's kind of like George Carlin.
So you know that show's completely canceled, right?
The Goldbergs?
Yeah, yeah.
It got canceled?
No, it's good, so it's probably going to be canceled.
Oh, of course. Well, actually, I think the ratings have been pretty good for it, so good. That's why I was like, no! But that show's been really good, and I mean, there's a variety of other shows that I like. I mean, I really like Person of Interest, which, you know, some people really don't seem to be getting into it or whatever. But I just dig that show. It's kind of like Batman minus Batman, you know, like pretty much it's just pretty much a show with no costumes, but it is essentially, you break down all the characters even. You know, you got a millionaire, you got a guy who goes out every night, fights crime, wears a suit all the time. And, you know, there's a lot of elements behind it that just seem very cool. It's a really well thought out show, you know, with some awesome stories. And it doesn't feel like just a repetitive type drama or whatever. So I've been really enjoying that. And, of course, my one that I'm really looking forward to, outside of Doctor Who, of course, which I'm really excited about, you know, that coming back this fall. But I've been watching Orphan Black. I actually saw the episodes live, and I don't really go back and rewatch a lot of episodes once I've seen them. But I love that show so much that I have been actually going back and rewatching the episodes, just because I think it's amazing. So, yeah, that's pretty much my list for TV. So.
Yeah, I just been so busy lately. Like, I haven't gotten a chance to watch what I want to watch, and like I get to where, like, if I start watching something, I get irritated because I can't keep watching it. So I guess I just watched the most uninteresting things possible right now.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the shows that you talked about, Justified, seems like an amazing show. I think you told me about that before.
But the thing is I'm catching up on it. That's what I mean by uninteresting. It's like I'm catching up on it. You know what I mean? So it's like not dire. If I see one episode this week and then three next week, you know, like it's kind of uninteresting that way. Girls is good, but it's really hard to watch because I really can't stand Lena Dunham.
I'm guessing that you watch it mostly because of your girlfriend.
Well, she likes it. I actually like the writing on the show. I just can't stand her as a person.
Ah, okay.
Like, I think she has a cool angle to her show, and I'm sure a lot of people would debate me on this, but I think the writing's clever. I think if you're a Kevin Smith fan, you'd probably like it.
Oh, yeah, well, I definitely am, and I probably would, so I should definitely tune in.
It's also spoiled 20-somethings, I mean, so there's that aspect, too.
That would kind of drive me nuts, though, that little part, but
Adam Driver makes this show for me.
Is he her boyfriend on that show?
Yeah. Yeah,
I think he was.
I really like his character a lot.
You know what? I think he was actually being rumored as being Nightwing in the new Justice League or whatever the hell they're going to end up calling it film.
He was.
I mean, I don't know if that's still the case or even if that's, you know, even valid in any way. But I thought that was interesting, and I was like, oh, okay, I can see it. That's pretty cool.
But no, I like it. It's a show I'll continue watching. It's just I wish Lena Dunham would let it get over herself.
I don't really know anything about her. I see her occasionally on a few magazine covers here and there, and I think she's on Vogue this month, you know, so But other than
all that, airbrushed up.
Yeah. Which I know a lot of people have been giving, you know, either her or their magazine grief about it. But I'm just kind of like, you know, she seems to actually like it. That's totally fine. You know?
Well, she gets naked in like every episode of the show.
Hmm. That's interesting.
Like it's because it is interesting because she's like the creator of the show and she's naked in every episode.
Right. She has no excuse. Like, you know?
Right.
It's like, yeah, I mean, it's not like, oh, okay, hey, you know, the producers, you know, this is what they wanted, and I'm a paid actress or whatever. So, no, it's a choice that she gets to make, and that's interesting.
And, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, like, I know most guys be like, well, dude, it's a naked girl, you know, but I don't even like True Blood for that reason. Like, I need my nudity in small doses. I don't need it, like, constant.
Right, right. I'm pretty much the same way. I don't know. I just always get kind of weirded out by nudity. I'm just like, what did you like, clothes? You know, clothes are so awesome.
Well, there's a difference to me between being a natural situation, mm-hmm. and then there's just like, hey, we're not old enough to handle boobies.
Oh, man. That seems like that would really irritate me. Like, it's always, just the creator's always naked for some reason. You don't really know why. Yeah. You know, maybe she's a nudist. You know, maybe that,
you know, like she'll have scenes where it's like, here's a 5-minute monologue of her talking.
Mm-hmm.
And like in the scene, she looks like she's supposed to be like collecting her underwear and dress or whatever she's supposed to be doing, mm-hmm. you know, because it's after they did their thing. You know what I'm saying?
Right. that thing. OK, yes, yes.
Yeah, that thing. And they'll have her like walk, like, you know, you'd pick your underwear up. The natural thing to do is pick your underwear up, pick your dress up, your pants, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's done, right? Well, they'll have like a whole 5-minute dialogue. And it's just so obvious. She's like, hey, look at me, I'm naked.
Oh, man. Yeah. Weird. You're giving me lots of reasons not to tune in.
I think you would actually dig it.
Okay.
Check it out. If you don't, I'm sorry.
No, no.
I'll buy you like a Kool-Aid variety pack or something to make it up for. But
I like Ecto Cooler, which they don't make anymore. So that's going to be a little bit difficult, my friend. So
I'll find the formula out. I'm sure I know a chemist somewhere on my Facebook feed. But do you remember the Hardee's Slimer ice cream?
Oh, man. I kind of vaguely do. But of course, that's been forever ago.
About to send you a picture, sir.
Oh, nice. I'll be looking for that. Yeah, I just, you know what? I remember there was some place that did some major Ghostbuster thing when I was a kid. Like, I don't know. Like, there was some restaurant that had like a lot of incentive for me going to, because it was all McDonald's. I'm not McDonald's. It was all Ghostbusters. And I remember like aggravating the hell out of my grandparents to always take me there. And I think eventually, I don't know. I don't even remember what it was now, but it was something big to me. Anyway, I'm rambling on about this.
No, there's nothing wrong with that. I can't believe you don't remember the Slimer ice cream. I thought you would remember this. I'm sending it to you now.
Well, it's clear that it has to be green.
You know, oh, yeah, totally. I mean, there's nothing special.
Yeah. Was it like pina colada?
I don't know. I think it was like bubble gum. But it's like, it kills me because I'm on Reddit a lot. I like that site, but whatever. Like, people will talk, there'll be like a thread and ask Reddit all the time, like, what's a food that you can no longer get that you have to have? And this Slimer Sunday comes up every time.
Oh, Lord, I'm looking at it right now.
And I'm like, really? This is what you miss?
I mean, it is the grossest looking Sunday I've ever seen in my life. Oh, man, why?
I mean, I get the Ecto Kool-Aid stuff.
Well,
you know?
Ecto Cooler was actually, that was actually a good flavor. That tasted pretty good. But, oh, man, now I'm thinking about Ghostbusters when I was a kid. I remember. Do you remember any of the toys?
I do. I had a lot of them, actually.
Okay, well, I remember the Proton Pack was a big thing for me when I was, like, maybe 6 years old. And like they discontinued it for some reason. I think it was because of the big foam thing that they had with it, the yellow stream thing. Apparently, I guess kids were like chewing into it and swallowing it. So it was pulled off the market. Like they discontinued it. And anyway,
the kids like now eating makeup on My Strange Addiction. Couch cushions.
So anyway, I think I was like 6 years old and Christmas was right around the corner. And I'm driving my family crazy with like, I want a proton pack, or I was saying a backpack, you know. And, you know, they had advertised it on television and I was like, oh my God, that's the best thing ever. So anyway, Christmas rolls around. They don't have them anywhere. They're gone. You know, the ones that were still on the shelves have been bought up. And, my mom had come back into town because my mom was living in California at that time. And so she was back for the holidays. And of course, you know, they're freaking out because the only thing I'm asking for Christmas is the one thing that they cannot find anywhere. Because I don't care about anything else. I don't care about whatever. I just want this damn backpack thing, which again is a blue plastic thing with a blue handle thing and a big yellow foam thing. That's it. But it doesn't matter. It's the proton pack. It's symbolic. So anyway, we did some church production and I'm on stage and of course they come around afterward and they ask all the kids what they want for Christmas and out of my lips is a backpack. And so my mom buries her head into her hands and it is like sobbing because she can't find this damn backpack thing. So anyway, my family out of the normal type of thing that they usually do, which is they went to a place called Andy's back in Arkansas, which is like a poor man's Hardee's. And so it had a
Minute. I thought the poor man's Hardee's was Hardee's.
Oh, man. So anyway, we ended up breaking that for whatever reason. And they ended up going to the mall that we went to. It was called the Pines Mall. So there was a KB Toys in there, and I'm dating myself by saying KB Toys. So anyway, they go into the store, and I'm going through the aisle, and I look up, and on the very top shelf, I see a proton pack. And it's kind of hidden, obscured, but I see it, and I start screaming, a backpack, a backpack. And so the first thing I realize is my grandmother comes, swoops me up and picks me up and drags me out of the store. And I'm just like, because I'm like, I saw one or whatever. And so that's when my mom was able to finally like grab the thing and buy it and everything like that. But that was the drama, I think, of Christmas 1988 or maybe even earlier than that.
I think it was 89.
Yeah, maybe 89. Because I know when did Ghostbusters 2 come out? Was that 89 or was that 90? Yeah, I think so.
Because it came out the same summer as Gremlins 2.
Yeah, yeah. That was either 89 or 90. So, because I know 89, of course, was Batman, which is a big thing that year, too.
It was 89. I just looked it up.
Yeah. But you know what? I was thinking of another toy, though, too. Like, do you remember the Ghostbusters Firehouse?
Yeah. Yeah, I had it.
You had it? Oh, yeah. I love that thing because they always said the slime pour down into the firehouse and everything like that. So after you did that, how difficult was it to clean the house?
It had this like it was had like a super glue type quality about it. It was like really crusty, but I didn't use it much. I think I used it like the first time I got it, and then I was just like, ooh, because I was one of those kids that didn't like to get sticky.
Yeah, yeah, I didn't either. So
I could have never grown up to be a porn star, but.
I had a friend who had it, and I was in awe because, I mean, I don't know, it could be a lot different now. But wasn't that thing really big, too?
I think it's about mid-size.
Mid-size, okay. I just remember that thing being, like, it had four floors, and you could put the car in the bottom. And to me, that was a big deal. Like, yeah. I remember, like, always being disappointed, for instance, with bat caves as a kid. Because it was always, they always had the fold-out playsets. And that it made me go insane to the point where I would actually start deconstructing things in our apartment. And I started building my own Batcave out of basically like, you know what? Screw this. I can do this. And so I remember one time tearing apart a black camper. Like, you know.
What?
Yeah, I did all sorts of crazy stuff. I was just like, I mean, I was pretty, you know, I wanted a real Batcave. You know, I was not satisfied with the toy versions that they kept producing. There was a black camper that my mom had, and then this was probably around Batman Forever time. And, I just was like, okay, so I had the video, which was rare, you know, like, cause you didn't have a lot of VHS tapes back in the '90s, cause they were like $100 a piece. So anyway, I ended up, like pausing the video and getting a good look at the cave. And so I would take scissors and start kind of molding like whatever pieces I could. Sometimes it was like old film canisters, you know, like the old black plastic tubes and stuff like that. And I would take all this stuff. I wish I had photos of it. Maybe I'm remembering it a lot better than it actually was, because, you know, usually when you're a kid, everything looks amazing until you're an adult and it's like, this is dog shit. But I thought I did a pretty good job on it. I remember people being impressed, you know, but my mom would later find out, like, wait, did you just destroy my $100 hamper or whatever it was? So that's what I ended up doing, just as a result of, like, they never made a quality product, so I'm going to make one myself. But yeah, so
I had you just reminded me of something for some reason. Like, when I was a kid, you know, you always pretend, like, in the neighborhood, you get together with kids and you, like, pretend to do all these things, like, these reenact these movies that you watch. So, like, our big ones when I was, like, first started doing that was Top Gun, which I don't know why we were mimicking Top Gun or why our parents were allowing us to watch it.
Please tell me you guys reenacted the volleyball scene.
I don't know if we ever did that. But our ideas of what life was at that time was a little bit questionable. Because that volleyball scene is the most homoerotic thing I've ever seen in my life.
I know, they're slapping each other on the ass. Like, yeah, this is awesome.
We used to reenact the skateboard scene from Back to the Future. That was one of them.
Okay. But
the one that will never, ever escape me was I had two girls that used to tell me they're going to beat me up if I didn't play Dirty Dancing with them.
Oh, man. So do you remember any of the dancing?
Dude, they would be, like, upset. Like, they would bring their record player and their Dirty Dancing LP. And it was, like, one of those little Fisher Price things.
Lift me!
Dude, I did. I had to lift them. I had to, like, dude, don't put baby in the corner. I had to, like, we didn't even know... We didn't even know what sex was yet. We were reenacting the, like, abortion scene and everything from the movie.
Oh, no way.
We didn't even know what it meant. We didn't even know what it meant, sir.
Oh, that is just beyond words. I love that so much. Oh, man.
One day, it made me so mad when they made that movie Crazy Stupid Love, because they had the Dirty Dancing scene in that. And I was like, I had written, like, a scene I wanted to use of, like, recreating that with kids.
Oh.
And I still want to do that one day.
Yes, that would definitely make the Funny or Die website for sure. But I may have you stumped with reenactments, and maybe not. I don't know. But when I was a kid, I had a next door neighbor who really was into Broadway musicals, and or just in musicals of any kind. But this wasn't even a musical. He just really liked acting, and so he would put on, like, shows for the community. Okay, because we were in an apartment complex, and he would put flyers out everywhere, and people would actually show up to this at the basketball court where the stage was. I kid you not. Okay, I could not make this up. And so, of course, I started hanging out with the kid, and I started getting involved in all the stuff that he was doing. So in the summer of probably 95, I would say, we saw a film that would basically... Like, I never thought the film was amazing or anything like that. Like, there was no time that I thought that, but he did. And that film, my friend, was Flintstones the movie.
So he was mesmerized with this piece of shit, and he just he could not get enough of it. I mean, my mom kept having to take us to the damn dollar theater to watch this film. I kid you not, probably like 7 times. Okay. And of course, I'm just like, oh, I have a friend, you know, like that was it. So I'm not questioning any of these very questionable decisions about going to see Flintstones this many times. So, of course, like this kid ends up going to a fabric store in town to find a leopard print Fred Flintstone type. And he ends up making all the costumes. Okay. And they're pretty damn good, too, if I'm honest. And so he, of course, it was funny. He was a blonde-haired kid. He plays Fred Flintstone. And everyone's like, well, shouldn't L play, you know, shouldn't he be playing Fred? Because, you know, he's the one with the dark hair. No, I played Barney Rubble. Hey, Fred.
What planet was this kid on?
I don't know, but and then we ended up doing this entire live production, and we did 3 shows. Okay, we didn't just do one; we did 3. And he, I
was
don't
it
know.
Sold out? And you had to open the box office for another day. Man.
I wish we had sold tickets, but no, there was nothing like that. It was, and actually, for each showing, a lot of people showed up. Crazy part. Like there was a lot of people who showed up, and so we ended up doing this play, and it was just like pretty much verbatim from the movie, you know. There was no real deviations. And so that was that summer. And then the following, like, it wasn't that many months later, he was looking for his next big moment of inspiration, and of course that would be Grease.
Wow.
And so I ended up getting hoodwinked into doing that. Well, I would say hoodwink. Well, that's the wrong word. I mean, I pretty much volunteered for all of this stuff again because I was so desperate to have a friend. That's how sad I was at that point. But
no, dude, that's nothing. You didn't get beat up.
No. It was just, yeah, that was pretty much it. So I went along.
At least yours was voluntary. I mean,
right,
like.
Right. So I just basically went on. So I did Kaneki. And he was Danny Zuko. Oh, man. And so I think the moment, though, that I finally had to break away, like, nope, I'm done. I'm done. He's like, we're going to go to the school talent show. I'm like, nope, I'm not. And so he went on stage, and of course, he ended up doing what is that song, Summer Nights? And yeah. He ended up getting a whole shit ton of trouble with the school principal, because you know, in that song he's like, we made out under the blood, you know, whatever, and he does the hand motions, and then he did the pelvic thrust.
No.
And this isn't an elementary talent show, and he's in the 5th grade, and
that kid was growing up, man.
Oh man, he grew up very, very quickly. So, you know, that's what I remember. And everyone's just like slack-jawed, and I'm in the audience, and we had a falling out at this point, and he was starting to bully me at that around that time. And I remember seeing that and seeing like the outrage and disgust of so many parents. And of course the principal, and I started laughing my ass off, just like loud and audibly, like, and it was because it was the funniest thing that I ever seen in my life. This like 11-year-old boy doing a pelvic thrust on stage with like a bunch of kindergartners and first and second, you know, just, it was insane. So yeah, so those were some of the films that I was around and reenacted when I was a child.
It reminds me, there was a summer camp that I went to, and the day we did this talent show, but like every talent, you know, every performance was like we'd lip sync to song. So in this summer camp, we like built our own instruments out of cardboard.
Wow.
And we recreated The Power of Love by Huey Lewis in the News.
Oh, but that's a good one. That's a good one.
Yeah, but our encore was We Built This City on Rock and Roll. And We threw glitter in the air at the beginning of the
Oh, sir, I bow down to you. That is amazing. That is.
I don't know if it's amazing or like all the girls are like, don't ask that guy out ever.
How old were you? How old were you?
I was probably like 7.
Okay.
6, 7.
But that's acceptable. If you had told me you were 13 or up, I would have probably been, we need to talk. But
I'm sure there was some girl in the audience like, he was kind of cute, but now I think he might be kind of gay.
Oh, that's brilliant. That's awesome. Especially with the glitter. The glitter was a nice touch.
Oh, we threw it in the air. We were just like, everybody had in their hands, and we did like
okay, guys.
Spirit fingers. I'm gonna regret this later.
Guys, I have an idea. I wish I was a part of that meeting that you guys had before you guys got the glitter in hand. It's like, okay, guys, I got something that the entire audience is gonna go crazy for. We're gonna be knee deep in chicks, and all we have to do is take a handful of this glitter and throw it up at the air at the beginning of the song. Who's with me?
It was awful.
Oh, that's fantastic. I want to recreate that. I want to recreate a few of these stories that we've shared so far.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it might have to happen.
I think at the same age, I was like obsessed with Howard the Duck, too.
Oh, Howard the Duck.
I used to draw him. And I think my teacher was like, why's his parents letting him watch a movie with duck boobies in it?
You know what? That film freaked me the hell out. I saw that and I was just like, okay, this is disturbing.
Yeah, I've always like, it's terrible. It's like one of the worst movies ever made. Mm-hmm. But I always have to go back and watch it just because it's like a big acid trip or something.
Yeah. It's like, what? Didn't George Lucas direct that one?
He didn't direct it. He produced it.
Okay. I know he directed 3 films. I remember this back from movie trivia in the 90s because that's, you know, now they do like the, you know, the movies, like, or the, not the movie stuff, but the video footage before the film. But back in the 90s when they still used to do the trivia, there was one like, George Lucas directed 3 films. What 3 films were those? And everyone would go, well, probably the Star Wars movies. And I'll be like, no, idiot. And I'm like, American Graffiti, Star Wars, and then I always blanked on the 3rd one. And I, for the longest time, I was like, Howard the Duck, maybe? I don't know.
It was, he did THX 138.
Right, but I thought that was like a college project.
No, it was actually a film.
Oh, okay, so then that was his 3rd one. Interesting. Yeah, okay. That's right, that was a film. That was a film. Wasn't like...
I love that movie.
You know what? I need to go back and rewatch it, I think. But yes, and for anyone listening who did not know, THX 1138 is also, well, that's where he got the Stormtrooper name from. So, you know, he threw that in there as a little nod to his own film.
Yes, he did.
So, all right. Well, I think that we have overshared on this podcast.
A little bit. I'm going to regret this, but I'm okay. I'm okay.
Yeah, we'll be fine.
All right, that is it for this week's episode of the Stray Popcorn Podcast. That was our inaugural episode. I'm excited. Like I said, we've been talking about doing this for a year, so it just finally came together here. And super excited. Couldn't be happier. And guys, please go and support the podcast by rating it and subscribing to it on iTunes or whatever podcast platform that you use to listen to your podcast. And also, if you will go ahead and like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter, we are Stray Popcorn at both websites. So facebook.com/StrayPopcorn and twitter.com/StrayPopcorn. Also, we've got a website coming soon, a bunch of other stuff, and we will keep you updated with all of that. Look for the podcast. We're talking Wednesdays or Thursdays, but we'll get that solid by the next podcast, which will be out next week. So, guys, once again, thank you so much. You're troopers for sitting in there and listening to the entire hour 20 of this particular podcast. We'll try to keep it a little bit shorter in the future. But also, at the end of this podcast here, I have to include this little audio clip I was trying to do the original outro the night of, and there was this little gem that came from it. So without further ado, here is the conclusion to this podcast with this little thing.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening, and stay popping.
Oh, God. I'm like, yeah, okay, there has to be a closer or something.
I'll fix that. Don't worry.
Okay.
I'm going to call you back.
Because I almost did.
I'm keeping that, dude. I'm doing something with it.
No, that's fine. I put you down by the dirty wall. I feel your energy. It's so over the top. I want